The Assassin.
You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest. You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest.
What up, y'all? You're listening to Sports Talk with Trop, and I'm your host, Katie Trop. Well, what do I always say about those division games in football? And that is, it does not matter if one team is dominating and the other team is shit, because last night was the perfect example of that. So we had the Pittsburgh Steelers at the Cleveland Browns, and this is usually a pretty good game. They tend to be pretty good games, and I wasn't surprised that the Cleveland Browns actually came out on top in this one. Because they came to play, but they usually come to play against Pittsburgh. And it doesn't matter how shitty they are, they came to play. So it was a snowy-ass night as well. I mean, it didn't start off that way. There was just like kind of snow flurries. But as once we hit the second half, it was a full-on fucking blizzard. So it got real sloppy at certain occasions. And there were certain points in this game where, like, there was a field goal kick by the Steelers. I couldn't even see if it went through, where the ball went, to be honest. And Mike Tomlin's got friggin' snow in his beard, hanging from his beard. And, like, you're looking at the players, and some of them, they could barely even see because it's windy as well. So they've got friggin' snow just blowing in their face. But, and then you could just tell on a couple of passes where it looked like it was real difficult for the quarterbacks to even decipher who was on their team or really where to throw the ball. So it was a pretty crazy game overall, but the Cleveland Browns ended up taking the win 24-19. You know, with the Pittsburgh Steelers, I've been saying their defense is excellent, but their offense is meh. And their offense was terrible last night up until the fourth quarter when they finally kind of got some momentum and started to get a little things going. But I think that was more just the Cleveland Browns getting in their own way. But the Cleveland Browns were able to just get it going in the end and score that final touchdown to get the big-ass win over the Pittsburgh Steelers. Nick Chubb had two touchdowns, but the big game, of course, was from defensive end Myles fucking Garrett. This guy is a beast and a half. I mean, TJ Watt is a beast and a half too, but guess what? He did not do shit last night. He was exceptionally ineffective. The Browns took excellent care of the side of wherever TJ Watt was at. They were double, triple teaming this dude, and they took care of business, but it was the exact opposite from the Pittsburgh Steelers with Myles Garrett. Myles Garrett was just an absolute beast mode last night. Three sacks and a forced fumble. And he just was, he was doing what TJ Watt does. He's in on every play, and he affects every pass and every drop back, and Myles Garrett just was in on everything and was a huge reason why the Cleveland Browns took home this win last night over the Pittsburgh Steelers. So let's get into week 12, the rest of week 12 at least, in my head-to-head matchup with the homie Simon Ruvalcaba. Last week I went 11-3, which bumped my record up to 106 wins and 60 losses, and Simon went 9-5 last night, so he dropped back a couple more games on me. His season record is 94-72, so he's got quite the hill to climb for the rest of the season. So let's begin with the Minnesota Vikings at the Chicago Bears. Right now the Vikings are a 3.5-point favorite. The Bears have just been what I've expected from the Bears. I've expected them to have their big moments, which they've had, but I've also expected them to have their down moments. And right now it kind of is feeling that way for them. I kind of expected the end of the season to really be a struggle for them, especially. And now here we are with the Minnesota Vikings, one of the best teams in the league. They have arguably the best defense in the league. I think I would probably put Pittsburgh slightly above Minnesota, but I mean, honestly, you could probably make arguments for both of them, and this Minnesota Vikings defense is really why they're 8-2 on the season. So I think Minnesota's the defense is going to have a field day against the Chicago Bears. I don't think there's going to be any problems for the Vikings defense getting at Caleb Williams, and really, I wouldn't be shocked if they cause a couple of turnovers as well. The Vikings offense is very good at times, but then Sam Darnold has been throwing these interceptions in the red zone and really making some boneheaded mistakes. He actually had an excellent game last week, so hopefully he's able to kind of continue to roll on into that. But the Chicago Bears defense is actually pretty good as well. It's had its struggles over the last couple of weeks, but I still think they're going to step it up against their division rivals. But with that being said, I still think the Vikings are the better team, and their defense is going to be the main reason why they win this one. So I've got the Vikings winning 31-21. Simon also has the Vikings winning 27-17. Oh, and by the way, Simon and I both took the Steelers last night, so we are starting the weekend off 0-1. I picked the Steelers 21-16. He picked the Steelers 27-13. Then we have the Detroit Lions at the Indianapolis Colts. Right now, the Lions are a 7.5-point favorite. And, I mean, Detroit, what is there to say about this team? They're too goddamn good. And Indianapolis is just that team that's just kind of searching for an identity, and they just really haven't gotten anything going. And you're not going to find anything against this Detroit Lions team. So I actually really expect this to be just all Detroit all day. I've got Detroit winning 37-17. Simon also has Detroit winning 35-20. Then we have the New England Patriots at the Miami Dolphins. Right now the Dolphins are a 7.5-point favorite. New England is just very... They're not a good team, but they're very capable of making it a game. And so I do think this is going to be a close matchup, but I kind of feel like Miami's really going to just dominate this one from start to finish. They really have been getting it going offensively, especially since Tua, he seems to be progressing along each and every week. And I mean, this offense has always been electric with Tua at quarterback. So I expect them to get their plays on offense, but I expect it to be kind of a battle because this New England Patriots defense is actually pretty damn good. And this is a division battle, so I don't really see Miami running away with this one. But I do have Miami winning 24-17. Simon also has Miami winning 21-14. Then we have the Tampa Bay Buccaneers at the New York Giants. Right now, the Buccaneers are a 3.5-point favorite. And if you did not hear the breaking news today, Daniel Jones has been released by the New York Giants mid-season. You know, they benched him earlier this week. So DeVito's going to be coming back at quarterback. You know, he came in at quarterback last year and kind of gave them a little bit of a spark, but he really wasn't that good of a quarterback. So I'm not expecting any miracles from him, but hey, Daniel Jones is out there on the free market. I wouldn't be shocked if somebody picks him up now, but I also wouldn't be shocked if he just is out there until next season, because I don't know, at this rate, you're probably not going to change your season. I mean, for example, let's use my shitty Dallas Cowboys as a team that could use a quarterback right now. I don't look at Daniel Jones as being a guy who's going to come right in and turn the season around. I kind of feel like we should just keep with what we have and just keep on losing and get a better draft pick next year rather than signing somebody like Daniel Jones. But you never know what's going to happen. But that's just kind of the way I look at it, is he's been released now. So why would anybody pick him up unless it's for potentially next season or just kind of to fill in, and you never know, injuries could happen, and a team out there might want him, so we'll see what happens. But now back to this Tampa Bay, New York Giants game. Tampa Bay has had their ups and downs as well, but I think it's mostly just because of the injuries that they've had to battle through this year. But overall, Baker Mayfield is just on fire. I am loving what I'm seeing from this dude at the quarterback position. He gives no fucks, and he plays like it. And they're supposed to be getting Mike Evans back this weekend, so I think that's excellent for them. And I'm just kind of looking at this game as being a complete demolition by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I've got the Buccaneers winning 30-14. Simon also has the Buccaneers winning 23-17. Then we have the Dallas Cowboys at the Washington Commanders. Right now, the Commanders are a 9.5-point favorite. Sounds about right. So as I always say, I do not pick against my Cowboys, no matter how shitty they are. So yes, I am picking against my Cowboys. Why am I? How's this going to happen? Well, it's a division game, remember? You know, I always said it doesn't matter what's going on in these division matchups. Sometimes something magical happens. So, the Cowboys are going to magically win somehow. They are magically going to put together a couple of drives, and the defense is going to be able to hold back the Commanders from scoring more points than them. And I have the Cowboys winning 21-20, and Simon has the Commanders winning 27-16. So, yeah. Not expecting miracles from my Cowboys. As a matter of fact, they're probably going to lose. They ain't shit. But hey, the defense actually has been playing better. We'll see what happens. But, yeah, we'll just go with that. Then we have the Kansas City Chiefs at the Carolina Panthers. Right now, the Chiefs are a 10.5-point favorite. Chiefs are coming off of their first loss of the season, so this is an excellent get-right game for them. As a matter of fact, the Chiefs have not had, like, a dominating game yet this season where they have just blown up a team. So I think that's going to be this week. They're coming off of this loss, so I kind of expect them to really just kind of get it right. And the Panthers are not a good team at all. And honestly, the Panthers don't benefit from really getting any wins. I know, don't get me wrong, I know the players want to win. I know the coaches want to win. I know everybody wants to win. You should want to win. I'm sure there are some of these teams that really couldn't give a fuck at this point. It kind of sounds like that's what's going on with the New York Jets, but who knows. But with the Panthers, I see that they've got fight in them, but they don't benefit from winning this. They might as well just keep losing, and hey, they might have the first pick next year or a top two or three pick, and hey, they could pick up Travis Hunter, and boom, this offense is something else. You know what I'm saying? So you might want to keep losing if you're the Panthers, but I think this is going to be way too much for the Panthers. I mean, hell, this Kansas City Chiefs defense is really good, so I kind of feel like they're just going to take it to the Panthers offense and probably end up with a couple of turnovers and really be, this is probably going to be the best Chiefs game just from them scoring. I kind of feel like they're going to score quite a few points in this one, so I've got the Chiefs winning 27-10. And Simon's going against his Carolina Panthers. He also has the Chiefs winning 27-24. He thinks it's going to be a closer game, but yeah, he and I are pretty much in the same boat with our teams. They pretty much suck. We're just looking at the draft next year. Then we have the Tennessee Titans at the Houston Texans. Right now, the Texans are a 7.5-point favorite. The Texans are very shaky this season, but the Titans are not a good team at all, so I kind of feel like this is going to be a good game for the Texans. I feel like they're just going to pound away and really just dominate from start to finish, and I really don't see the Titans having a chance at all. So I've got the Texans winning 30-14, and Simon also has the Texans winning 27-13. Then the afternoon games, we have the Denver Broncos at the Las Vegas Raiders. Right now, the Broncos are a 4.5-point favorite. This is a division battle. Las Vegas looks terrible right now. They've got nothing going on offensively, and hell, even their defense hasn't been that good. Denver, on the other hand, to me, is a very surprising team. Defensively, this is one of the best defenses in the league, and nobody is talking about them. They're up there in sacks. They're up there in turnovers. They're damn good on the defensive side of the ball, so that's going to be a problem for the Raiders with how terrible their offense is. Plus, Bo Nix, man, he's got his problems because he's a rookie. He's going to have his growing pains, but he has had his moments, and last week he had his best game with 4 freaking touchdowns, and I mean, really, he's just got it, and he just looks like he's fitting right in with this Denver offense. So I have Denver winning this one 28-20. I just think Denver's the better team. They actually seem to be getting better as the season progresses on. And to me, Vegas is kind of another team, just like the Panthers and the Cowboys, where you don't really benefit from winning at this point in the season. You might as well keep on losing and hope you get a shot at Shedeur Sanders or Travis Hunter or Jainty, one of these really good, because next year's draft is good. That's why, like, it sucks being a Cowboys fan right now because we are so fucking terrible. But hey, we should be getting a solid pick next year, and this is a damn good draft. And it's the same thing with the Raiders. They don't really benefit from winning. And like I said, I'm sure they want to win, but they just don't really benefit from it. And I just think the Broncos are a better team. So I've got the Broncos winning 28-20, and Simon also has the Broncos winning 24-21. Then we have the San Francisco 49ers at the Green Bay Packers. Right now, the Packers are a 1.5-point favorite. The Niners' injuries just keep piling up. As a matter of fact, Brock Purdy is he's looking very in doubt now at this point to play in this game. You know, at first, when it was announced that he had a shoulder injury, I believe, he was day-to-day, he's been practicing, and then all of a sudden he was pulled out of practice yesterday or the day before, and just kind of the way Shanahan was answering questions, it sounds like Purdy's probably going to be a game-time decision. It looks like he might legitimately miss this game. And then Bosa, it's the same thing with him as well. So there's a couple more injuries for the Niners to look out for. But regardless of who plays at quarterback in this one for the Niners, I felt like this was going to be a battle regardless. Green Bay, I just think, is a better team, a more consistent team. Defensively, they're one of the best in the league. So I think they're actually going to be a problem for the 49ers just because they're very capable of turnovers. And I just kind of feel like if Purdy's in, he might throw a turnover or two. And Green Bay's going to take advantage of that. I do expect it to be a battle. I don't expect this to be a runaway game. And it's also sounding like we're going to have some Green Bay type weather where it's going to be snowing and windy and not looking too great. So that might have an effect on how this game turns out. But I do think Green Bay is the better team, the more consistent team, and the Niners just don't really look good right now, and the injuries keep piling up. And if you don't have Bosa on the defensive side, and if you don't have Purdy as quarterback, I don't even know who their backup quarterback is. So, I mean, it's probably going to be an issue for them regardless. But I've got Green Bay winning a close one, 24-20. And this is one of the few disagreements Simon and I have this week. He is going with the 49ers to win this one, 27-21. Then we have the Arizona Cardinals at the Seattle Seahawks. Right now, the Seahawks are a 1.5-point favorite. Arizona's been a big surprise this year, and this NFC West is a battle. I predict that the NFC West, I don't know the teams that are playing each other in the last week, but basically how they've set up the schedule over the last couple of seasons is that it's always a division matchup for each team to end the season. But I feel like the NFC West, I'm not really sold on any of the teams. I don't look at the NFC West and go, oh, these are Super Bowl-bound teams. But each one of them, you could make an argument as to why they will win the division. And any one of them could win this division. And Arizona, to me, has been a huge surprise because I really written off Arizona. I really didn't know what to expect from them. Defensively, I didn't expect them to be good, and that's kind of where they're at. But offensively, I was like, they've got a shot, but who knows what's going to happen. Well, it turns out they're pretty good offensively, especially with Marvin Harrison Jr. He seems to be clicking on all cylinders each and every week, and he's just fitting more and more in here. But the Seattle Seahawks, they're just a weird-ass team where they'll lose a stupid-ass game, but then they'll do what they did against the 49ers last week. And that's kind of how I feel like this Cardinals-Seahawks game is going to go. I think it's going to be a back-and-forth battle. I would not be shocked if it's like touchdown, touchdown, field goal, where it's just like every freaking... Every possession of the ball is going to matter, and I also wouldn't be shocked if it comes down to like a game-winning field goal, a game-winning touchdown, some type of game-winning drive that happens in the last seconds of the game. And I'm leaning towards Seattle in this one. They're at home, so they play really well at home. They're probably feeling themselves from last week, and the Cardinals, I'm not sold on them. They definitely have a good offense, but I just don't know about their defense, and I just don't know about their consistency from week to week. And this is a division battle with two very balanced teams, so it's going to be a good game. So I've got Seattle winning a close one, 27-26. This is another disagreement between Simon and I. He also believes this is going to be a close one. Headed into overtime, he's got Arizona winning 27-24. Then our Sunday night football matchup is the Philadelphia Eagles at the Los Angeles Rams. Right now, the Eagles are a 3.5-point favorite. To me, the Eagles are probably the worst 8-2 team I've ever seen. I am not convinced that they're a good team. To me, the reason why they're 8-2 is they're just holding on. The NFC is not a good conference. Honestly, it's Detroit, and everybody else is pretty much crapshoot, in my opinion. And the Eagles, they just offensively not looking that great other than Saquon Barkley. They don't have that level of consistency. Now, the defense has definitely stepped it up over the last month and a half. They definitely have looked a lot better, but I just feel like they're not that good. The Rams, on the other hand, they're also kind of in the same boat to me where they're just not that good, but they have their moments. But I do think they're good enough to beat a team like the Philadelphia Eagles, especially because offensively, you know, Matthew Stafford, he's having an excellent season statistically. It's just his offensive line is just terrible, and he's had his moments where he is just getting his ass beat in some games, but the dude is still, he is still just throwing it everywhere over the field. The guy has such a cannon for an arm, and so now that he's got Kupp back, now that he's got Nacua back, and then you still have Kyren Williams in the backfield looking good, I feel like this offense is actually just going to put together a really good game here, and I think defensively they're going to make enough plays to potentially maybe, you know, cause a fumble, cause some type of weird turnover. It just gives the Rams the edge in this one. They're also at home, so I'm kind of giving them that edge as well. And plus, I just feel like Philadelphia is due for a loss. So I'm going with the Los Angeles Rams in this one, 23-20. Simon is also going with the Rams in this one, 27-24. Now moving on to baseball, we had a couple of awards handed out this week. We had all the end of the season awards handed out this week. So we'll talk about the main awards that everybody cares about, beginning with the AL Cy Young Award went to Detroit Tigers starting pitcher Tarik Skubal. I mean, it was obvious it was going to him. He had such a fan-fucking-tastic season. I mean, first of all, nobody expected shit from the Tigers. He went to this team. He picked this team. He didn't have to, and he's been a good pitcher for the last couple of years. As a matter of fact, even before the season started, I remember I was watching a lot of the preseason prognosticators, and a lot of people picked him as their Cy Young Award winner. And so I was like, really? The Detroit Tigers? They're going to have a Cy Young Award winner? And yeah, Skubal, he did not have a bad game. He just cruised on through this season, had a career year, and absolutely deserved it. I mean, this team ended up going to the playoffs as well. None of us expected them to go to the playoffs. And they ended up actually, you know, they didn't win a World Series, but they are now building something up in Detroit. And you might have to watch out for them next season. Then the National League Cy Young Award winner was Chris Sale. He, with the Atlanta Braves this season, had the greatest season of his old-ass career. He even said he had plans to retire last year. I mean, if you don't know the story of Chris Sale, this is excellent for him to win the Cy Young because, you know, he started out as one of the best pitchers in the league, and it looked like he was going to do what he's doing, winning Cy Youngs, dominating the league, but unfortunately, injuries were a problem for him. And then he got traded to the Red Sox, and they had a lot of high hopes for him. But then it was just like every year, and they weren't just like little injuries here and there. They were those debilitating injuries where he would miss the rest of the season and he would miss the entire season. And they were just always boom, boom, boom. It was one after the other. And it just kind of felt like this is how his career was going to end. So the Red Sox end up trading him to the Braves over the offseason. And he was just really expected to kind of just be at the back end of the rotation and just kind of, you know, be that veteran presence, hopefully, you know, get them to the playoffs. And unfortunately for the Braves, it was just a very injury-prone year, which really derailed their entire season. But Chris Sale was the shining star for the Atlanta Braves this year. I mean, he was the most consistent. He was the best. And this, it's so awesome to see that his career goes from like the ultimate low where you are just about to fucking retire and you come out and you have the greatest season of your entire career. And to cap it off with the Cy Young Award, that is just great. So congrats to both Skubal and Sale. Now we also had the MVP awards come out as well. And neither of these are a surprise. So of course the American League MVP went to Aaron Judge. He was in contention for the Triple Crown all season long. Best hitter, hit for over 60 home runs this season. Just really absolutely dominated. Unfortunately, he went cold during the playoffs, but that's not what the MVP award is for. The MVP award is for the regular season only, and nobody dominated the regular season like Aaron Judge. He even dominated it more than the National League MVP for sure. But it was all about him, and this is his second MVP award. Very well deserved, but hopefully he can build off of that and win a World Series next year. Then the National League MVP went to Shohei Ohtani. Also not surprising at all because he and Judge, it was all about those two all fucking season. It was boom, boom, home run, stolen base, this, that, and the other, Triple Crown. Both of them were in contention for the Triple Crown in both leagues. And then Ohtani, this is his third MVP, his first in the National League. He won a World Series this year, but he also, just like Judge, he didn't go ice cold, but he really wasn't a factor in any of the games for the most part for the Dodgers. But hey, he had a complete season where not only did he win his MVP award, but he also won his first World Series as well. But I mean, all of those four awards, they are absolutely deserving of winning those awards. Moving on to NBA. And let's just touch base on the NBA Cup standings and where everybody stands after the first week of the NBA Cup. And if you don't know about the NBA Cup, it's not consecutive. Not every single game is the NBA Cup. So while the NBA Cup is going, it's basically like every other game or every couple of games. It's like one game's an NBA Cup game, then your next game is just like your regular, normal, regular season game. But so this is kind of how the NBA Cup is. It just kind of sprinkles through the regular season until they start getting to the semifinals and all that in Vegas. But right now, here's how everything looks as far as the standings go. In the Western Conference Group A, right now on top of Group A is the Houston Rockets at 1-0 and the Portland Trail Blazers at 1-0. Minnesota's at 1-1, Sacramento 0-1, and the Los Angeles Clippers at 0-1. Group B right now is led by my Los Angeles Lakers, 2-0. By the way, have not lost a game in the NBA Cup yet. Because they just, you know, they just started the NBA Cup last year. Lakers did not lose a game in the NBA Cup last year, winning the NBA Cup. So, heading into this one, still haven't lost a game in the NBA Cup. Oklahoma City's got, they're at 1-1. The San Antonio Spurs are 1-1. Phoenix is 1-1. And Utah is 0-2. In Group C in the Western Conference, Golden State Warriors 2-0. Dallas 1-1. Denver 1-1. New Orleans Pelicans 1-1. And Memphis Grizzlies 0-2. Eastern Conference Group A, Orlando 2-0. New York Knicks 2-0. Brooklyn 1-1. Philadelphia 0-2. Charlotte 0-2. Eastern Conference Group B, Detroit 2-0, Milwaukee 1-0, Miami 1-1, Indiana Pacers 0-1, and Toronto Raptors 0-2. Eastern Conference Group C, Atlanta 2-0, Boston 1-1, Cleveland 1-1, Washington Wizards 0-1, and Chicago 0-1. So we had a couple of topics in the NBA this week. Let's go ahead and begin with the Philadelphia 76ers are not having a good season at all. I kind of feel like we had some expectations for them this year, and they are not living up to any of them. I mean, they did sign Paul George in the offseason, so he was kind of supposed to add in with Embiid and Tyrese Maxey, and Maxey's having a great year so far, but it's really been Joel Embiid. He hasn't played much. He started off the season nursing some type of injury that appeared out of nowhere, and then he's been playing, but he is not playing well. Well, it turns out his team feels like he is not giving his all. And apparently, earlier this week, Tyrese Maxey confronted Joel Embiid about it. And basically, he told him that he needs to not only be accountable for how terrible he's been this season, but apparently Joel Embiid is late to everything. Not just practice, not just film sessions, not just he is late to everything. Now, this dude just signed a big contract extension in the offseason. So it's kind of like you look at him and you go, you know, you signed that big contract. And I get it. If you're injured, you're injured. But this is very questionable with him. Especially because, I mean, he's just been, for me personally, I've enjoyed the career of Joel Embiid. I like him as a player. I think he's a good center, and I would like to see him succeed. That's what I personally would like from him. But this season has been an absolute 100% disappointment from him. And it's nice to hear that Tyrese Maxey confronted him about it, and he, quote, is going to try harder. It just kind of shows why the 76ers are playing so terribly this year. I mean, there's plenty of time for them to turn it around, but you expect more from a dude who just signed a huge contract extension in the offseason, and it's like, what are you doing, dude? Do you want to win, or did you just want the money? And I mean, of course, a lot of these guys do just play for the money. There is a good segment of athletes who that is all they play for, and he could be one of them, but it just is like, man, could you just, you need to step it up. I'm sorry, he just needs to step it up. And that's all there is to it. And Tyrese Maxey told him as much. Then the other topic, and I've really been avoiding this topic because I don't think this player is good. So I don't think he needs to be discussed unless something happens. And so this topic came up and it really just pissed me the fuck off because it's just, ugh. It's just so, I can't believe that this is happening with an NBA team, but it is. So, before I begin on the topic, let me just say on the subject of nepotism, because that's what we're going to talk about here. I personally understand nepotism is never going away, and I don't have a problem with it. I personally don't. There's going to be, of course, Nepo kids who take advantage and actually excel with all the advantages they've been given because of who they are. And then there's also going to be the kids who are just shitbags and just take advantage of everything, but don't do anything with it. And so I personally don't have a problem with it. I mean, I feel like everybody, I mean, I don't have kids because I'd rather kill myself than be a mother. But those of you who have kids, everybody wants to help their kids in life. And so I don't personally see a problem if you own a business and you hire your kid and you teach them, you give them good work ethic and they actually take those tools and actually become something of themselves. I don't have a problem with that. I also don't have a problem with it in like sports, for example, because we have many, many, many athletes throughout the many years of sports where there's been many father-son duos. And now there's even like three or four generations of some players who are in the NFL, the NBA, and Major League Baseball, and so on and so forth. There are generations of players. And, you know, the reason why there's generations is because their father, in this case, helped them get to somewhere. And then they took that and became better or just went on and did nothing. So I personally don't have a problem with nepotism. I know everybody would help their kids if they can. There's no issues with that. You should want your kids, the best for your kids. Everybody should want the best for their kids. So Bronny James, I already thought it was ridiculous. He was drafted by the Lakers, but you know what? They used a low pick. He was like one of the last five picks taken in the draft. He had a terrible, you know, first of all, let's just say in high school, he was a phenom. He looked really good. He looked like he was going to go on and potentially do great things. Then he unfortunately has his little cardiac arrest issue, and I'm sure that set him back in certain ways. Then he goes to USC, plays a year at USC, and does absolutely nothing. He literally is averaging like 2 points a game at USC. We all know he's headed to the NBA because, of course, he is LeBron James' kid. He gets drafted by the Lakers with one of their lower picks, so whatever. And I mean, as a Lakers fan, we all knew that was going to happen. These are the consequences of having LeBron James on your team. Everything revolves around him and all the fucking everything he wants, he gets. And so this was what happened. Bronny is a terrible basketball player, so of course he's going to be in the G League for the majority of this season. And no, I'm not impressed or think it's cute that, oh my God, they played in a game together. I don't give a shit about that. You know why? Because Bronny fucking sucks. He is not a good basketball player. If he was a good basketball player, yeah, I would have thought that was a cool moment. But to me, not a cool moment. A waste of fucking time moment, in my goddamn personal opinion. But I digress. So Bronny is so terrible, he has to play with the G League. So with that being said, some news was announced last week before, that Bronny is not going to be playing any of the road games with the G League. Now, the G League, if you don't know, is basically like the minor leagues the same as baseball, minor leagues. And this is the minor leagues for basketball. Usually, if you need growth, if you're kind of on the precipice of maybe being a pro, but you don't know, maybe you needed a couple more years of college. Well, that's what the G League basically is. You're still getting paid, you're getting paid as a player, but you know you're not that good to be in the NBA. You need some more help, and that's what Bronny is. He is absolutely a G League player. I don't even think he's that, but I digress. So he's not going to be traveling with them on any of the road games, which is just fucking ridiculous because this is obvious nepotism right here. This is obvious because they're actually making it sound like he doesn't want to stay in these lower tier hotels and fly on all these coach airplanes. And he's acting like he's too good to do this, that, and the other. And honestly, not only does it sound like that, but it's just like, how are you going to get better if you're not playing in any of these fucking games? I've also heard stupid people, because, you know, with LeBron, a lot of you have his cock completely jammed down your throat. So you make excuses for everything that has to do with LeBron, including Bronny. Some of y'all actually think this kid is a good basketball player. He's not. He's terrible. and won't be good. He's never going to be a good basketball player. As a matter of fact, he'll probably leave the league when his daddy leaves the league because no team is going to want him because he's a terrible fucking basketball player taking up a roster spot, even in the G League. There are probably better G League players than him. And they'll travel on the road. They won't think they're too good to stay in a Holiday Inn Express or whatever it is you have a fucking problem with. But people were trying to make excuses like, oh, it's security. It's security. Y'all, this is not the first Nepo kid to join sports. Let's use somebody today whose dad is the coach of his team, and he's actually one of the best college football players today. Deion Sanders, the coach of the Colorado Buffaloes, and his son Shedeur Sanders, the quarterback of the team, who is actually one of the best fucking players in college football. He is a Heisman Trophy candidate, and he's got the potential to be the number one overall pick in this upcoming NFL draft. He is actually a motherfucker who's working hard and taking advantage of all the advantages he's been given by being Deion Sanders' kid. And he's not, oh, I can't travel on the road. Guess what? He travels on the road, y'all. And he's in fucking college. But Jesus Christ, everybody acts like, oh, it's LeBron. Oh, let's all make up all the excuses for crappy-ass Bronny James. I'm just so sick and tired of hearing about this kid. He sucks. He has taken up a roster spot, and he's not even traveling with the G League. What are you here for? To hold your fucking daddy's hand in a fucking basketball game so everybody could go, oh, that's so cute. You people are stupid as fuck. Swear to God. This is so ridiculous that he even has a roster spot. He is terrible. And even in his G League game so far, he's averaging 2 points a game. He's terrible, y'all. You can make up all the little excuses you want. He sucks. He ain't going to last longer than 5 years. Put money on that shit. And guess what? He doesn't have to last longer than 5 years. You know why? He's LeBron's kid, and he's going to be rich and set for life no matter what because he's LeBron's kid. Anyways, now let's move on to this week's list. In the NBA, since we are talking about the NBA, the Cleveland Cavaliers, their winning streak of 16-0 came to an end earlier this week against the Boston Celtics. As a matter of fact, the Celtics pretty much dominated their asses. It was a close game, but I watched the game and it was pretty much all Celtics all night. But anyways, they're now 16-1. They still look like a good team, but that got me thinking because there's been a handful of occasions where teams have started the season undefeated and you look at it and go, is that fake? Or are they going to go on to win a championship? And really, honestly, there's been quite a few teams to kind of start the season 10-0. And the record, of course, and we're going to talk about this team, it started off the season 24-0. So that's the NBA record. But it makes you think. Just because you start the season off undefeated, does that mean you're going to even make the playoffs? Or does that mean you're going to be a championship-level team? Or was that just, oh, fake, phony bullshit because you're in the Eastern Conference? Because let's all be real, y'all. When we're looking at the NBA, the Western Conference is head and shoulders above the Eastern Conference. The Eastern Conference right now is the Celtics and the Cavaliers and everybody else. So is it just the Cavaliers are lucky because they're in the East? Or are they actually a legit team? We'll see how the season progresses on. But that got me thinking about all the other teams that have started out at least 10-0. So this week's Trop 5 is going to be the Trop 5 best NBA starts. And so all of these teams have started off the season undefeated and went on at least 10-0. It looks like on my list here, the lowest of them is 11-0. But when you really look at it, I think there was about, I want to say there was 12, 13, 14, somewhere in that range that have started off 10-0 or better. And only three of them have gone on to win the championship. So that just goes to show that it doesn't, if you start off the season undefeated, that may not mean championship. But there are some damn good teams in that list. So let's go ahead and get it started with the Trop 5 best NBA starts. At number 5, I have the 2002-2003 Dallas Mavericks. I remember this season, by the way. This was such a crazy season. So the Mavericks started off the season 14-0. This was with Dirk Nowitzki and Steve Nash. This was a tag team duo for the ages. They were such a good team. This is a team that you look at and you're like, how did this team not win a championship? Because those are Dirk and Steve Nash, MVP caliber players, Hall of Fame level players, just two of the, and on the Mavericks, they were at the peak of their careers. Like, boom, these were two excellent players in the prime of their careers. They ended the season 60-22. They actually did not win their division. They lost it to the San Antonio Spurs. But you got to remember, this Western Conference back in the day, this was with the Lakers, this was with the Mavericks, this was with the Spurs, even the Timberwolves. If you don't remember, Garnett was with the Timberwolves at this time. So this Western Conference was really crammed up and with some damn good teams. So unfortunately for the Mavericks, they didn't win their division. And then they ended up losing in the Western Conference Finals to their division rival San Antonio Spurs in six games. The Spurs won the series 4-2. But I remember this Dallas Mavericks team, y'all, because I am a Lakers fan. So this was obviously, you know, it was just a tough season. It was just a tough season for the Western Conference, meaning it's just like there were so many good teams in this season. But the Mavericks, man, I remember they started off the season 14-0 and they looked like they were just cruising to a championship. Then at number four, I'm going to drop five best NBA starts. I have the 2015-2016 Golden State Warriors. This is the record holder. They started off the season 24-0, and they are also the record holder for the best regular season record at 73-9. Steph Curry had one of his greatest seasons ever. He was a unanimous MVP, and it looked like there was no way the Golden State Warriors were losing anything in this season until Draymond Green punches LeBron James in the nuts. He gets suspended for a game, and that literally changed the entire trajectory of those NBA Finals. The Cleveland Cavaliers were down 3-0. They go on and win four straight motherfucking games. The one and only time the Cleveland Cavaliers have won the NBA Finals. So not only did they beat their rivals, and not only did they make the finals, but not only did they beat the Golden State Warriors, they beat, like, the best Golden State Warriors team hands fucking down in one of the craziest upsets in history. But this team was so damn good. So, they lost to the Cavaliers. Game 7, NBA Finals. Just, it was nuts. But they started off the season in record fashion and ended it in record fashion. Now, let's get to the top three. These are the only three to have won championships. That's why they are in the top three. So, number three on my top five best NBA starts, I have the 1964-1965 Boston Celtics. They started off the season 11-0 and ended the season with a 62-18 record. As a matter of fact, this team is known as one of the 10 greatest teams of all time because every starting player and starting five is in the Hall of Fame. Bill Russell was on this team. As a matter of fact, Bill Russell won the MVP that year, and they just demolished everybody and would go on to win the NBA Finals against my Lakers in dominating fashion, 4-1. And it was just, they demolished everybody. It is crazy what this 64-65 Celtics team did. I mean, the Celtics dominated the 50s and 60s. I mean, they were the team. I mean, they won so many fucking championships. This is probably their best one. If you were to rank all of them, this is probably their best and greatest of all time. I mean, it says a lot when they're ranked as literally one of the 10 greatest teams ever. Then at number two on my top five best NBA starts, I have the 1993-1994 Houston Rockets. Started off the season 15-0, ended the season 58-24, and needless to say, this was Hakeem Olajuwon's greatest season ever. He won the MVP, he won Defensive Player of the Year, and he won a whole bunch of other fucking awards that year. But most of all, he won what was most important, and that was the NBA Finals. They would beat the New York Knicks in a crazy NBA Finals. It would go seven games and get it, of course, 4-3. Houston Rockets, this was just a dominating team. I mean, I don't think a lot of people remember Hakeem Olajuwon. I mean, people do, but I just don't think he gets the credit as a lot of other players do simply because this Houston Rockets team, of course, took the back seat to the Chicago Bulls because the Chicago Bulls, of course, dominated the 90s. And then Houston was basically lucky that Michael Jordan retired and gave them a couple of seasons so they were able to win a couple of championships. But Hakeem Olajuwon is one of the most dominating figures in NBA history. And this season, this 93-94 season, like, whoa, he was so dominating. He averaged, I believe, a triple-double a game. So he was just so, just killer on the boards. He could shoot. He could play defense. He was just on some in this season. But number one is on my top five best NBA starts is the 1996-1997 Chicago Bulls. As I said, they always overshadowed the Houston Rockets of this era. They started the season off 12-0, ended up with a regular season record of 69-13, and they would ultimately go on to win the NBA Finals against the Utah Jazz in six games, 4-2. But I mean, this was Michael Jordan. This was with Dennis Rodman. This was Scottie Pippen. I mean, it was the dream team, man. This Bulls team is literally one of the most impactful teams in NBA history. And even though the Rockets, I feel like their undefeated streak was probably a little bit more dominating, but at the same time, it really wasn't because this Bulls team, they owned this era. And for this team to get even better after, because this was when Michael Jordan came back from retirement. So this is post, you know, his stupid little baseball career. And so they would come back and just be absolutely dominating, win three more championships, and this is one of them against a good Utah Jazz team. But I just thought I had to put them in number one because nobody dominated more. And come on, it's the Bulls of the 90s. That's all there needs to be said. And if you weren't around when the Bulls of the 90s were here, you just don't get it, and you just don't know. All right, y'all, that is today's show. I will talk to you fools on Monday.